Well, I'm going to get started here. Can you hear me okay in the back? Okay. Thanks to Brian, we've talked about women on the baseball field. Now we're going to talk about women in the stands. A little bit different story. What I'd like to do is, I'm going to skip over some of these slides. And point out to you here is that what I want to do is follow a timeline here, starting from 1858 all the way up through the current day, showing the role of women in the ballpark and how they were accepted in the ballpark from the very, very beginning to the present day, and make an assessment of where professional baseball stands today with respect to the female fan. 1858. First date that we're going to look at. Many of you here probably realize that the first time we ever charged admission into a baseball game was in 1858 at the great baseball match at the Fashion Racecourse, which was a couple yards away from where Shea Stadium was built 100 years later. This was actually a series of three different games. One of the games drew 7,000 or 8,000 people, and there was a reported 1,000 or 1,200 women in attendance at that point in time. To encourage the women to be in attendance there, number one, the game was during the week to keep the rowdies away from the ball game. But there was special provision made for ladies accompanied by gentlemen. There would be no liquor served, no gambling on the premises, and so forth and so on. Skip forward to the 1880s. There's a series of photographs or woodcuts that shows ladies at the ballpark. One of my favorites is this one here. The artist in this particular case is showing ladies at the ballpark dressed to the nines, if you forgive the pun, but also interestingly showing none of the women in the crowd here paying any attention to the baseball game going on. Now we'll go forward here, pass by a couple of here, and let me just say, there's a couple of my slides here, it's got too many words on it, don't worry about reading, I'll tell you what's important on there. What was really happening in the 1800s was a recognition of that women could not just fill seats at a ball match, but also help to tone down the behavior of the immigrant fans who were in the grandstands, largely Irish, some of my ancestors, and Germans, who were drinking too much before and during the games, and the presence of women was intended, although separated, was intended to tone down some of that behavior. To accommodate the women, you see on this slide, special entrances, covered seating, box seats, rooftop luxury boxes sooner or later, no smoking sections, neatly furnished toilet rooms with attendants. So a real effort was made to encourage women to come to the ball games back in the 1800s. And the first appearance of ladies' days, which a lot of people took credit for inventing, although one of the first most enthusiastic employers of ladies' days was Charlie Byrne, who owned for 14 or 15 years the Brooklyn Grays, Bridegrooms, Trolley Dodgers, and then the Dodgers, who tried to make every day a ladies' day, with all the non-smoking sections and the armchairs and so forth and so on. He tried to make, because it really worked with the women, he tried to make every game a spectacle of one way or another. As this points out, we're using flags and pennants and red, white, and blue bunting, brass bands, and so forth and so on. And it had a really positive effect. What Charlie and a lot of the other owners of teams back in those days also discovered is that if you had a matinee idol that you could pitch on Ladies' Day, a good-looking pitcher who could win, that really pumped up attendance as well. And they came up with it, the ladies and the press came up with some very interesting nicknames for some of these matinee idols. Ladies' Day is just by... sort of a summary here in terms of the 1800s. Women were sometimes admitted free with an escort, admitted for half price, with or without escort. And there was something interesting that happened in St. Louis and other places, what they called turnstile dating. A woman who wanted to get in for free didn't have an escort for the day, but would make a one-minute date with somebody to get into the ballpark. If that did any good from that point on, that was another story. Very successful ladies' days were back in the 1800s at the minor league level. At first, ladies' days were always done on weekdays because men would be off to work, wouldn't be there in numbers, so it was scheduled Mondays, Thursdays, Fridays, Tuesdays, or what have you. That would change in time. 1909, Ladies' Day. The National League suspended Ladies' Days at that point in time. Attendance had boomed from 1903 to 1909, and the big city teams, not unlike today, the difference between the big market teams and the small market teams. The big market teams, led by the Giants, looked at the situation and said, we don't need Ladies' Day's promotion. Let's do away with them. What they were really motivated by was the fact is that when they were on the road, anybody who was getting in for free or a discount was not part of the official attendance. And that's something that the Giants and other big teams on the road would not share in the proceeds, the gate for that particular day, if there was a Ladies' Day being run on that particular road trip. Other small market teams like the Boston Doves absolutely thought that they had to run Ladies' Day's promotion, take a loss at the gate, but make up for it at the concession stand. 1919, let's see what's happening. By 1919, baseball was so popular with women that the fan base was measured at anywhere from 15% to 25% female, depending on the market and the team. And Ladies' Days led to Old Timers' Days, and that we got the Player Days, Mason's Days, Boosters' Days, and Mordecai Brown Day. And that went on. The Player Days went on for a long time, and 7 years ago, when my dad passed away, I promised him that I would show this particular slide whatever chance I would get. Eddie Mayo in 1947 at Yankee Stadium, visiting with the Tigers, had a day there, and I still remember that car. But so much, Joe, for this. Back up here. Am I freezing up here, Amy? I don't want to escape here. Yeah, but I want to go back. Okay, that's good. I picked out four dates here that sort of tell the story about Ladies' Days over the years. There's some commonalities to these four particular dates. 1930, the Cubs did a marvelous job with Ladies' Days over the years. Packed 51,000 people into Wrigley Field when they had less than 40,000 seats. 31,000 of those people in attendance were women. The Cubs finally got to the point where they said we have to cut off at 20,000, and if you came and you were over 20,000, they'd give you a rain check of sorts to come back for some later day. But it was so popular in Chicago, and it really spread to other places. Now, the commonality to these four dates here is that there's a VEC involved in each one of these things. First in Chicago, and then in Cleveland. And we see that what Bill Veeck learned early on and started implementing was that if you're going to sell baseball to large groups of women, why would you show it on a Monday or a Tuesday against the week, the St. Louis Browns are in town? He started running them on Saturdays against the Yankees. And one of the other things you probably picked up on this is that Bob Feller apparently did not do very well in front of large groups of women. a few photographs along the way here. Trivia buffs. Anybody identify the player sitting on the dugout steps here signing autographs? 1925? Bucky Harris. Thank you. You get a drink for that. Some more. What we see here on the top is League Stadium in the top right, League Stadium in Cleveland, St. Louis, a couple of Boston photographs. Now you can tell from this photograph that these two ladies are really enjoying this particular game. The Yankees were kind of late to the Ladies' Day. 1938, the very first one, and it was Lou Gehrig's 1977th game, keeping score. And my favorite photograph is this one. The Red Sox ran this for a number of years. They sort of turned Ladies' Day into Ladies with Habit Day. People see this thing and they, first of all, look at the cups that every nun is holding, wondering what might be in that. But most of them are also wearing sunglasses. They ran them in the 50s and 60s. 1958, now we've got to get really serious here. What happened in the overall macro environment? Post-war, women started not going to baseball games the way they used to. Three reasons for it: baby boom, the suburbs, and television. Then, in the early 70s, some court cases that didn't amount to much, but men, and I think it was largely one attorney in California that was out, didn't have enough casework, brought some suits saying that Ladies' Day discriminated against men. There was equality issues, Title IX, and so forth. But women started complaining as well about the stereotyping, the condescending, tone-deaf marketing that was being done by major league teams. Only one exhibit is necessary there. This was very successful for Charlie. But what it violates is a cardinal rule of sports marketing, and that is, if you got 35,000 people in there, in your stadium, and you're saying, wow, this is a success, and there's 6 or 10 or 12,000 people who say, Charlie, come on, what is this about? Some people are happy and some people are not happy. You got to worry about the people who are not really pleased with this. They might be sitting back and say, I'm not sure about coming to another game this year. I've had it with this. So that's part of what was going on here. A real sea change in what was going on in terms of the economy and the culture. Now, I'll take you back to what may be the most significant date in this story. December 28, 1958. The day that Alan Ameche crossed the goal line and helped the Colts beat the New York Giants in the greatest game ever played. Ironically, the game was played where? Yankee Stadium. So what was really, really going on here? Let's look at some of that. Again, don't read this. I'll tell you what's important. Major League average attendance in 1960 was 16,110. They didn't hit that number again for 16 years. If you look at the growth rate in average attendance from 58 to today, it's 1.1% per year. Got to raise some questions. Now, the accountants are looking at the books in Major League Baseball and say, hey, we're doing great. There's all sorts of money coming in from television. But our attendance, who knows? If you look at total attendance growth from, depending on whether you're looking at it from 58 or 76 to now, it's 2.5% per year. NFL attendance increased in all but 4 of the 17 years from 60 to 76. And that was, in part of that time, they were competing with the AFL. Gallup poll, you can see what it says there in terms of what's his favorite sport. And the TV ratings. Baseball ratings were flat. NFL, all you have to say is Rube Arledge, Pete Rozelle, Monday Night Football. The world had changed on professional baseball. What happened after 1958? Just to bring this to a close, how am I doing here? Excellent. Baseball now had, unlike earlier times, serious competition. And it wasn't just the NFL. It was lots of things, sports and otherwise. But women, most importantly, were no longer a homogeneous market. And it's no different with all these logos on the bottom. Everybody in the consumer marketplace was facing the same thing. It was no longer one big mass market. The mass market died. And if you just look at women in baseball, it started splintering and segmenting itself. into different groups. How did baseball respond to that? Well, you look back at this picture from the 30s, see all these women gathered there, going into League Stadium in Cleveland, probably motivated by the fact that it was just a day out with the girls and to relax and get away from the kitchen, and just enjoying yourself. These are the pictures you find if you go online looking for crowds of people at baseball games now. There's no women, groups of women there. I mean, they're scattered. And they're old and they're young and they're educated, not educated. And they're working outside the home and working in the home. All sorts of things going on. Somebody wrote recently, with the percentage of female fan base interest steadily increasing, and it's up to 45%, Major League Baseball is expanding its marketing efforts to appeal to females. Okay. We know the commissioner launched something in 2000, the Women's Initiative or something like that. We realize that there are young single women and they're different from what they want out of baseball, from older single women and single moms and married with children and spouse or not. Professional women, grandmas, they're all different. In terms of age and income, education, occupation, marital status, there's a lot of baseball teams, Cleveland's one of them, that's doing an awful lot to really study this market. But they're focusing in on these demographic things, which is traditional. But they're not really looking at the other side of it. My colleagues and I at Western Michigan started this a couple of years ago, of interviewing women, of all, representative sample of women. What really turns you on about a trip to the ballpark? What is it that you really like? What really got you excited about it? What makes you want to go back? They love baseball. They have a good time. There's family time. They see stars in person. They escape for a day. You get down to... This is only a third of our list, the things that they identify. They take photographs and they put them online and tell people where they've been. There's all sorts of things that people are doing. But we're not segmenting. We're not taking. We're saying they're old, they're young, they're married or not, they have kids at home or not. But we're not really focusing in on the things that really get them excited in the ballpark. A couple of quick examples to end on here. If you go online and start looking at Major League Baseball teams and what they're doing, appealing to the female market, many of them, for a number of years, have run these programs that you can probably call Baseball 101, where they are exposed, the experts come in and tell them about the rules and strategies, and maybe the manager comes in and gives a little lecture, the Q&A with players, players' wives, scouts, the third base coach comes in and says, this is how you interpret all of this. There's tours of the clubhouse, the press box, the scoreboard. Great stuff. All baseball-oriented. Then you go online and you find some of the other things that are going on. I won't name the team, but they did away with this Baseball 101, and I don't know why. They replaced it with a program that's a Mother's Day, Girls' Day Out, Days Out package. Styling tips from fashion experts. Merchandise vendors that you can buy stuff from. Women's team apparel and accessories. I'll be back to that in a second. Interactive stations, demonstrations, hair, nails. Wow. Gift bag filled with team goodies and a game ticket. Now that gift bag filled with team goodies, I wasn't going to put this on here, but there's one team that actually, in that gift bag, puts team logoed underwear. I'm not a woman, but I got to tell you something. I would be insulted by that, and I know a lot of women are, to be appealed to and say, we're not taking you seriously. You can't be a serious baseball fan. You got to be interested in hair and makeup and underwear. That's about the end of what I have to say here, other than just to prove that I've got credibility up here for what I'm talking about. Wrigley Field in Los Angeles, I won't tell you what year this is. You could look it up by going to look at my dad's record in the encyclopedia. But the lady that's circled here is my dear mom. And if you look real closely, there's a little kid on her lap. So I started studying this stuff a long, long time ago. In summary, last one, just a takeaway. Women have always been attracted to baseball. And they've always been welcomed at the ballpark, maybe not on the field, but in the stands. Women, like men, especially attracted to big games and big stars. And in the early days, special accommodations were made for women and extensive use of ladies' days. The culture changed after World War II. For a while, women attendance dropped and ladies' days lost their appeal. And then on December 28, 1958, the world changed. Modern women have choices, they have money, they're easily insulted by marketing that plays to stereotypes, that is tone deaf and assumes that women cannot enjoy and understand baseball. And there's probably five or six distinct market segments where we take all the women that are attracted to baseball for whatever the reason and put them into those groups. And I think that's the next step in this process. It's been 50 years since the world changed. And I think baseball's sort of got to catch up with this particular market. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Just two things quickly. I swear I have a memory of going to Halter Top Day at Memorial Stadium, and it would have been the very late 70s. I swear.
Late 70s, yeah.
And they also still have Ladies' Day in Dominican Winter League Baseball in San Pedro, and it is my dream to go someday.
Excellent. Thank you.
Could you address the Ladies' Day riot of 1897?
That's a long and interesting story, and I'm not going to address it other than to say, if you're not familiar with the Ladies' Day riot of 1897, look it up. It's a fascinating story. Win Mercer was the pitcher there, and he got thrown out of the game and caused a riot.
I noticed you didn't mention when the Atlanta Braves had a fiasco with a wet t-shirt night, I think, in late 1970s.
There you go.
I read about it, I think it was the memoirs of their PR guy at the time said that they had two problems. One was that the players were concentrating more on the ladies. The other was that I believe the winner was the daughter of a fire and brimstone Baptist preacher. But he found out that his precious daughter had not been hanging out with her girls that evening in a prayer meeting, but with her boyfriend who had dared her to show off her assets. I'm very glad that baseball no longer has to do such tawdry promos.
They're being cuter about it, that's for sure. Thank you.
And good presentation, but you omitted the name of arguably the most famous woman baseball fan, Katie Casey. Remember her song called Take Me Out to the Ball Game?
Yeah.
She was the one who wanted to be taken out.
Yes. Yep.
This is one item of note. You showed a picture of Nuns Day at Fenway Park. The Minnesota Twins, under leadership of Calvin Griffith, because he was a brought up in an orphanage, I believe, sponsored Nuns Day for many, many years at Metropolitan Stadium in Minnesota, almost in the 1970s. My question is regarding the Cubs of the 1930s under leadership of Wrigley and Bulbeck Sr., have you looked at the role of radio and what that played at that time in promoting Ladies' Day? Because at that time, the Cubs had an open radio policy where I believe there were five stations in the Chicago area.
Yes. A very interesting story, because radio, even more so than television, some would say, played a role in letting women keep in touch with the game once they got hooked on it. It allowed them to multitask, if I can be stereotypical about that, to multitask, to still be cooking in the kitchen and listening to the ballgame. Very interesting story. Yeah. Do we have time for more hearing? Yeah. Some of the evidence on that is really murky as to whether it really stimulated. I mean, it was very popular for a long time, but then it started tailing off, and once the war ended and the professional players came back from the war.
In terms of women's attendance at those games, is there any information about
I think it was really skewed toward women. More women in the audience than men. Yeah.
Could I also ask you, what it was like to be the son of a Major League Baseball player?
It was a different childhood. I was the envy of all my friends. And I recently reconnected with a high school chum of mine in the very first, and this was after 50 years. The very first thing he mentioned, he says, "You know what I was most jealous of, Eddie? That Philadelphia Phillies hat that you wore." So, that's probably it. Oh, one more?
Yeah, this is corroborated. I was at a Columbus Clipper game in the early 80s. It was a Holler giveaway.
That's what it was, a giveaway that they were wearing.
And I don't know for sure what you said about the underwear, but I think most sell women's underwear in the fan shop.
That they may do. In fact, Major League Baseball has an official partnership with Victoria's Secret. No problem with that, perhaps. But the deal is with this special day that they had and the gift, a critic wrote. Now, what would you do about the sizing on this? If you're handing out gift packages with women's underwear in it, do you ask what size she is? I mean, that's a legitimate dumb question. I mean, it's tone deaf. It really is. So, thank you very much. You've been wonderful.